Hello there, this is Chad Snee. I'm the editor of Lynn Stamp News and the Scott Publishing Company, and you're listening to Stamp Show Here Today.
Return to sender. Return to sender.
Stamp collecting happens when we dream together.
Welcome to Stamp Show Here Today, episode number 82.
I'm Cash.
This is Tom.
I'm Scott.
And I'm your host, Dawn. This week, we'll be talking about how to negotiate the price of stamps both on eBay and with dealers directly. I can think of no better expert topic than how to save money, not only on stamps, but on couches and cars and houses and everything else. We get emails. Some of the answer squad.
Why don't you send us a letter instead? Emails are fine, but so we love stamps.
We got an email this week from Doug. He says, "Hi, gang. Love the podcast. I currently work in the same building as the new production for a new Star Trek series that is being produced in Toronto."
Yay!
"I have recently purchased a bunch of the new 50th anniversary Star Trek stamps from Canada Post, and they are pretty awesome. I am wondering if I can get the production company to mail some envelopes with the production company name and return address, as well as some of the new 50th anniversary stamps. Is this going to make for a more valuable cover/stamp? Just wondering."
And he's also, I think so.
Yeah. Well, yeah. More valuable. Yeah.
More desirable.
More interesting. Yeah, by a lot.
And he included a picture of them.
And there they are.
That we'll show everybody because that makes for good radio.
Yeah. Hold it up to the microphone.
Mm-hmm, it is the coil stamp.
And now, unfortunately, it's a black and white picture, so you listeners may not be able to see it.
He does say also, notice that on the back has a bunch of quotes from the show.
Yes. Oh, that I
so
really?
On a strip. So he says, I can see that I'm going to have to buy another coil just to keep whole.
Yes.
Warmest regards, Doug. So you think it'll make it more valuable?
Absolutely. I love things that are tied to backstory. And that there is no better backstory than that.
I don't know if it's backstory. It's just cool context.
Yes.
Related. It's relatable.
Yeah, if you can post some of that to yourself and get the production company to send it to you with their return address and
stuff.
Well,
the nice thing on something like that is that it appeals not only to a stamp collector, but it'll also appeal to a Star Trek collector.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I remember doing that when the official stamps came out. And I was in college and I wrote every agriculture, just because of my major, every agricultural committee that I could. Because I knew they used officials. And so I got all this stuff mailed back with official stamps, and I got actual official stamps used in the mail sent to me. So, yes, I do know that it does increase the value, and it definitely has an impact on the cool factor, of course. Star Trek versus Department of Agriculture, I think Star Trek has it.
What I think I would really try and go for, I mean, if you really wanted to go for the whole thing, is see if you can find one of the storyboard artists for the shows to cachet the cover.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And then have it addressed and returned.
Yeah, to sign it.
That would be freaking, that would probably be worth money.
Yeah.
For sure.
Well, I did the Leonard Nimoy when he died, unfortunately.
Yes.
And I put it on the back of Star Trek postcards.
Anytime you can increase the number of people that want an item, you can charge more for it.
It's time for hashtag stamp stories. Oh, what a deal you can make.
How much, quick? What? It's for the wife.
Oh, 20 shekels.
Right.
What? There you are. Wait a minute. What? Well, we're supposed to haggle.
No, I've got to get...
What do you mean, no?
I haven't got time.
Well, give it back then.
No, I just paid you.
What?
Yeah.
This bloke won't haggle.
Won't haggle?
All right.
As stamp collectors, we all know about negotiating already, but it is surprising how little credit we give ourselves. We negotiate all the time, which puts us... You have like a stroke or something.
Leave that in.
We negotiate all the time, which puts us in the top 10% in the U.S., way above the average person on the street. So here are the top 10 things that you may know already, and if you don't, then you should. Number one, don't be afraid to ask for what you want. Successful negotiators are assertive and challenge everything. They know that everything is negotiable. This is called by Edward Bardot as the negotiation consciousness. Negotiation consciousness is what makes the difference between negotiators and everyone else on the planet.
I like this. There is also another person in the negotiation field called Dr. Chester L. Karas, who I believe is dead. And if he's not dead, he's incredibly, incredibly old right now. But he always said, peanuts are filling. Meaning that even if you just negotiate for little stuff, after a while you get enough little stuff to actually add up to something significant. And we do this all the time with stamps. You know, and if you're not negotiating stamps, if like last, what brought this on is last week we got an email asking, you know, is it tacky to negotiate? And not only is it not tacky to negotiate, but here we're kind of presenting some tips on how better to negotiate.
Number two, shut up and listen. I'm amazed by all the people I meet who can't stop talking. Negotiators are detectives. They ask probing questions and then shut up. People will tell you everything you need to know. All you have to do is listen.
I'm listening.
I don't hear any comment, but it's true. If you don't ask the right question, they won't give you the answer you're looking for.
Well, also, it's difficult to determine what a price is. Get realistic. Without asking a person what the price is, you're not going to know what the price is to even start with.
Well, I mean, most dealers have a price on something when you walk up to the table. That in itself is a starting point.
Yeah, but it's a starting point, and we'll get into that.
But it's
a
not
later.
A starting point to your advantage.
Yeah, that's not a real starting point.
Well, I think that
it is a reference point. I mean, whether it's $100 or $1,000, now you have at least a ballpark.
That is true.
This is something I've seen in the pin trading world. Is you talk about shut up and listen. Is to me, it's a concept of. You're standing there and you're going to trade with somebody and they come up to you and they see a pin that they want to trade for and they start going on and on and on and on and on about how much they want it, how much they like the character. It's the perfect scene they've always been looking for. And basically all they're doing is telling you how much they're willing to give you for it. It's just like, just say, hey, I'm really interested in this pin. Done.
Well, actually, you were telling me a story about your wife not following the shut up and listen rule.
Well, I don't think it was that necessarily that rule per se, but we were a long time ago, before we were even married, we were shopping for a coffee table and end table, and guy came up and, you know, there wasn't a price on everything. So I said, you know, hey, how much is the coffee table and the end table? And he gave me a price like, I don't know, it was like $400 or $500 something. And I was like, oh, man. And before I had a chance to say anything, my wife turns and just looks at me and goes, that's in our budget.
Oh.
And I'm like, oh. Because she just killed any chance we had of doing anything. It's not like, you know, it wasn't we can afford that. It was that's in our budget. So, yeah. So, it just took all negotiation power. And, you know, furniture stores, you can almost always, you know, talk them down at least a little bit.
Why problem make when you no problem have you don't want to make?
Number three, do your homework. Know the stamp and the issue. Know what condition the stamp exists in. Be aware and use the information to make a better deal.
Yeah, last week a person asked, when dealers say this is undervalued in Scott's catalog, are they like full of BS or whatever? It was his question. And realistically, no, but you have to know whether he's telling the truth or not. You have to know what you're buying. The more information you have going into a negotiation, I don't care whether it's for a car or a stamp, the more information you have, the better of a deal you're going to make.
Well, absolutely. He might, you know, he might be telling the truth. He might not be telling the truth. Is it overvalued? Maybe, but maybe not for that condition. Maybe for the condition he might be claiming, yeah. But it might. And if it is that condition, yeah, it might be. But if it's a much lower condition and he's overgraded it, then he might really be exaggerating quite a bit.
Well, and that comes down to almost more than anything, like a buyer beware kind of thing, you know. If you don't know what condition it comes in, then you'll never be informed enough to make a good deal.
Yeah, this stamp only exists reperforated and regummed. It's like, I think I'm going to buy from somebody else.
It's like going to Tijuana. Those people negotiate for everything, including their groceries.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. No, if you want to be an expert, go to Tijuana and buy a serape. You will become an expert at negotiating.
Or you will pay way too much.
Well, they'll start off at $50. And if you do a good deal, you'll spend $7.50. And if you don't do a good deal, you'll spend somewhere between $15 and $50.
Number four, always be willing to walk away. In other words, never negotiate without options. If you depend too much on the positive outcome of a negotiation, you lose your ability to say no.
Well, yeah. If you've been searching for a stamp for years, say, and then find it, you have the high potential of overpaying for it unless you are willing to walk away. And a lot of times that's because the dealer knows you've been looking for it for 5 years.
Yes.
You've given him that knowledge.
Yeah, if you give a dealer a buy list, he knows that you are going to pay more for that stamp. And if it really is a rare stamp that you've been looking for 5 years, you know, unfortunately, we're stamp collectors, and sometimes we're just going to pay the price and move on. But that being said, I'm not going to tell people how to negotiate. But if you are unable to make a deal with a dealer, walk away and then come back to the dealer 15 minutes, half hour later and see if he's changed his mind. There is some value in persistence.
Did that in a car dealership once. Just walked away. Car dealers, they love to, the dealerships, they love to play Foursquare.
Yeah.
And I walked in, my wife and I, to a dealership, and we were going to test drive a car. We had an appointment. The car that we wanted had been sold. It was a used car. And we found something, meh, but we needed a new vehicle. So we took something for a test drive. While on the test drive, the dealer drove us, like, through the car center, and I saw a Volkswagen deal. I'm like, ooh, that's a nice car sitting right there. So I already had something else in mind immediately at another dealership, and I was pre-approved through my bank. Mm-hmm. So we got back, and he wanted to start the whole Foursquare thing, and I'm like, well, I need to know what the interest rate is because I'm pre-approved from my bank, and I want to know if you can beat the interest rate. Well, and it just came down to the constant, well, how much can you pay? What are you willing to pay? That's like, no, we're not playing that game. And it went back and forth, and it was funny because I was getting frustrated, but my wife actually beat me to the point on this one. He said, you know what? We've got an appointment in another dealership. We got to go right now, so we'll call you back and let you know. And we got up and walked out. And we just got in our car, drove half a block down to the dealership, walked up. Happened to be a Volkswagen dealer. Yeah, free plug for Volkswagen. They need it right now.
Yeah, they need it from us.
And
after this podcast, they're going to skyrocket. Buy your stock now.
Well, they just needed to get over the whole diesel thing. But yeah, we walked over there and guy came out. You want to test drive this car? We sure do. And we took it for a test drive. I walked in. I told the guy the same thing. I said, listen, I've got a deal from my bank. I'm pre-approved. I just want to know if you can beat my interest rate. And he said, okay. He ran my credit, came back and said, we'll give you this price, this much interest, these are your payments. And I said, cool, congratulations, you beat my bank, I'll go with you. It's like, why couldn't the other dealership do that? It was funny, the other dealership was calling repeatedly,
yep,
trying to get us to come back. And my wife said, no, we bought another car. So yeah, we walked away. You gotta be willing to do it.
The best deals that I ever made in stamps have always been while I was walking away, after I turned the person down. Now, some of those times I have turned the person down, but I know I'm going to take the deal. I am happy with the price, and I still walked away. And when I walked away, all of a sudden the price fell by 5% or 10% more.
Oh, yeah.
And those are the ones that I look back on that was good timing.
They're more interested in selling it than you are in buying it.
Yeah.
Number five. Don't be in a hurry. Being patient is very difficult. We want to get it over with, Anyone who has negotiated online with a person in a distant time zone knows that this takes time. If you don't take the time, you will not be effectively negotiating.
Yeah, I see this on eBay all the time, you know, when the offers come in and out and, you know, from a different country, and it takes a full day to get an answer. It's just normal.
Sometimes. But that's another thing with walking away, that you have to apply patience with it. Sometimes, as we've been talking about, it does take, I mean, you're not going to walk up and do a negotiation in 5 minutes and walk away with your stamp. It might take a couple of hours and a couple trips back to the dealer because you had to walk away a couple of times to get him to come around.
And that's a good point. You know, sometimes it does take 5 minutes because you're dealing with small value stamps. We're talking here about things that are worth negotiating. If you go up to the dime table and you pull out 5 stamps, you can very well say, you know, I got 6 stamps, will you take 50 cents? And of course they're going to say sure, because who cares about a dime? So that's going to be far less. And, you know, you're not going to walk away from a 50 cent thing. But be aware that, you know, you got a dime. Congratulations.
Add a couple of zeros to that.
Right. If you're dealing with expensive stuff, you know, like, you know, in the past I've bought collections and stuff worth over $10,000. Definitely, those were not 5 minute negotiations.
Number 6, aim high and expect the best outcome. A proven strategy for achieving higher results is opening with an extreme position. Sellers should ask for more than they expect to receive, and buyers should offer less than they are prepared to pay. People who aim higher do better.
I wanted to bring eBay into this because I'm a, you know, everybody here at the table is an eBay seller or works with eBay. And I have on mine, make an offer. And I will get offers, you know, I'll have a stamp listed for $25 and they'll offer 5. That's an extreme offer, but unfortunately I ignore it. It's too far off the mark. It's not worth it for me to address. If you were negotiating with me, and people are different, but if you give an offer for something less than half of what I have marked, I am not going to waste the time because we're too far off. Now, there's going to be dealers out there who say, if you offer me less than 25%, I'm not going to accept it. There are people who say 10%. You know, it could be all over the place, but for me, it's 50%. If you offer less than 50%, you get zero response from me. Now, but the interesting thing, and this just happened today, and I was thinking about tactics, and it's like, this is pretty good. The person gave me a really low offer, less than half. Then he came back, and he gave me one for like 2/3, and I was going to delete it. But he wrote a message with it. And the message said, I'm sorry, I don't know how much to pay for this stamp. Will you accept this price? Well, obviously, that's the message because he sent me the offer. If he didn't write that down, the mere fact that I got the offer would have been the same. But for some reason, just putting that personal touch in, I accepted the offer. And it was just that little personal touch that put it over the edge for me. And it's honestly the first time I ever noticed it, and it was just today. But if you offer too low, you're trying to get too much, I understand that, have a ball. But you have to realize that there's a lot of times when you will shut down the negotiation by offering too little.
You have to be realistic.
And on my eBay account, I look at the item when I list it, and I pick a point where I'm comfortable saying, yeah, I'll let it go for that, but anything less, and I'll hold on to it for a little while. Well, as far as my eBay account goes, I look at the item when I list it, and I decide, would I be willing to accept 10%, 20%, 50%? What would I be comfortable with selling this and just getting rid of it? And so when I put my eBay listings in, I'll use the automatic accept or automatically decline levels, and I generally match them. So I really don't necessarily get offers in my mailbox. They just automatically either accept or decline, and it just goes right through, and I don't even look at it. But I determine that level on a item-by-item basis because I don't do near as much as Cash does.
Well, here's the hitch with that, is that if you have a automatic acceptance of, say, 80%, people are smart rats.
Well, they'll figure it out.
They'll buy from you, and they'll say, oh, okay, this guy takes, and let's say they don't know it's 80%.
Right.
Let's say it's not a 20% discount. They know you'll take a 15. And all of a sudden, everything they're buying, they're taking 15% off.
Right.
So you may as well just lower everything by 20% and then not take any offers at all. But it's, you know, I like it because it takes longer, but that little touch of negotiation gets people to come back to you and ask for better pricing. And sometimes, I mean, I charge $1 for postage, and a person, you know, bought 4 items, and he sent me an offer with each item reduced by a quarter so that I would give him free postage. And it's like, okay, fine. I understand exactly what you're doing. Have a ball. Yes, not a problem.
Well, and it's another thing. I'll go back to my pins again. They had someone had created a pin trading database where you could put all the stuff that you own, all the stuff that you want, and all the stuff that you own and you're willing to trade away. And the same thing happened there a lot is it was all anonymous, so you'd get, you know, the system would send you the message, but you'd go in and you'd say, oh, I have this, you want it, but they'd do something like, they'd pick like, oh, I'm looking for this, you know, out of circulation little open edition pin, and they ask you for a $200 or $300 pin in return for this little thing that may be hard to find but is not anywhere near comparable. And it's just like you have to look at that and just kind of go, seriously? But then there's other people who are offer something that's maybe somewhat comparable, but then they'll include the message in it that says, hey, if you're not interested in this, look at my other traders and let me know if there's anything you would like or anything you might want to add to make it more even. And as soon as someone does that, I would pay more attention because they're not just throwing stuff out. It's like throwing it at the wall and seeing what sticks. They're actually making an effort. They're showing a genuine interest and they're willing to say, hey, if you don't think this is enough, let me know, or let me know if there's something different that you want. And that always helps open that up and, you know, get the better outcome.
Number 7, focus on the other side's pressure, not yours. The stamp buyer is almost always in the catbird seat. They have the power as the dealer usually does not want the stamp, they want the money for it. You can always use this to your advantage. Take your time and see what the real price is.
There's always a real price. I've negotiated for things where I'll all of a sudden hit a point where the seller wants to walk away because at that point, there's nothing in it for him. So you find the real price sometimes.
Number 8, show the other person how their needs will be met. For stamp collectors, this means usually just one thing, pay cash. If you finance as a seller, you can make the buyer better off. But in return, you usually get more for the stamp. As a seller, use this to increase your profits. As a buyer, pay cash and reduce what you will pay.
Yep, cash is king. I get my best deals when I pay cash. If I have to finance it or say, you know, let me pay you over 3 months, the dealers, they, like everybody else in the world, they want their money.
Well, I've met a few that just want to have you owe them.
Number 9, don't give anything away without getting something in return. Negotiation should be I go up and you come down. If they don't come down, then maybe you should consider walking away. You can always come back.
This is, again, I refer back to Dr. Chester L. Karas. There is a style of negotiation called Russian negotiation. and it was based on basically Nixon negotiating with Russia. You give in, they give in nothing. You give in, they give in nothing. You give in, they give in a little bit. So you're really, really fighting for every concession you get from the other side. If you ever see this happen, and there's a lot of places where this happened, where you know the negotiation is proper, but the other person isn't reducing the price, floor-to-ceiling or sellers are typically this way. What the stamps are priced at is what they are, and then they'll have like little chart on the side saying if you spend $150, you get 15% off. If you spend $300, you get 20% off. Everything is like really set and no negotiating. Well, they are taking away the negotiation. They are setting everything out so there's no negotiation. Here is what you have to ask yourself. Do I accept the fact that they are removing the negotiation? If you accept the fact, then not a problem. If you do not accept the fact, then fine, go ahead and negotiate. And generally speaking, you can still negotiate with these guys. They don't like to do it, but they will. In the real world, what you get is pre-printed contracts and leases and stuff like that. And companies will pre-print something and say, here's the agreement. Now, the agreement should be negotiated, but it's pre-printed. So you sit there and go, well, if it's pre-printed, I better sign it. No, just because it's pre-printed, and whether it's a contract or a lease or 20% discount when you buy $200, you have to decide whether or not you are going to say, okay, I accept your ending the negotiation. If you don't want to accept it, then negotiate. There is no law against it.
And again, if they don't want to negotiate, be prepared to walk away.
Yeah.
Number 10, don't take the issues or the other person's behavior personally. All too often, negotiations fail because one or both of the parties get sidetracked by personal issues unrelated to the deal at hand. How can we finalize a sale that is acceptable to both people? Obsessing over the other negotiator's personality or over issues that are not directly pertinent to making a deal can sabotage a negotiation. If someone is rude or difficult to deal with, try to understand their behavior and don't take it personally.
For me, I see this all the time, and the number one thing I always see that fits directly into this is you will offer a person $200 for a stamp, and he will come back and say, I paid more than that for it. Nobody, or no stamp has its value determined by how much a person paid for it. It's worth what it is. Second thing is, the person may have bought it in a collection, made his profit, and this is gravy. There's no way for, unless he purchased that individual stamp from an individual person with an individual check, that he has no way of knowing how much he paid for that item. And even if he did overpay for that item, just because he overpaid doesn't mean that I want to overpay. It doesn't mean I want to match his price. And I see this all the time with dealers saying, you know, I paid $1,000 for this, give me $1,250. It's like, no, it's not worth $1,000. I'll negotiate. And if the person has had it a long time, maybe he realizes, hey, I overspent this thing, I better get out of it.
Well, that's like, say you're buying an ounce of gold from a coin dealer, and the price is now $1,300 an ounce. And the dealer actually bought that particular coin at $1,400 an ounce. Are you gonna accept the premise that, well, I paid more than that? Okay, well then either A, don't sell it, or B, this is what the market is says it's worth, and I'm willing to pay that. Are you gonna sell it or are you not going to sell it? You have it here for sale. It doesn't matter what he paid for it.
Right. And the people who say, well, I paid this for it, you have to give me a profit on it. No, I don't. And whatever you paid for it does not determine what its value is to me. You may have bought it thinking that this person would buy it over here, and then that person didn't buy it. Now you're stuck with it. and you just want to get out of it. And you want to get out of it and make a profit. Nothing against that. But I'm not going to accept it, and I'm not going to use that as a end of the negotiation. Just because you say, I paid over $1,000 for it. Generally speaking, when a dealer brings that up, I will let him know. I won't tell him directly, but I will let him know that I really don't care how much he paid for the stamp.
And now for Cash's corrections. So, Cash.
Well, first, Tom has an item that he wants to bring up.
Yeah, I found out an interesting story the other day. Actually, I think it just came out yesterday. That I know we're usually talking about stamps, but this is more related to the Postal Service. A postal worker was just sentenced to a year in federal prison for theft of mail.
Oh, wow.
Did he find any of my eBay lots?
No, actually, what he was doing apparently was his indictment was for stealing money orders deposited in the mail by Postal Service customers.
Oh.
And he was taking them and cashing them.
Ooh. Jerk.
And the post office inspector general got involved, and they kept track of this for a while, and they finally indicted him. And it was evidence between March and June of last year that he was doing this, and he would cash them, and they found him guilty on 17 counts.
Yeah, you know,
of
he did
theft
more.
Of mail by a Postal Service employee. So he's got a year in federal prison. He's got 2 years of supervised, I guess, probation, basically, after that, and he's got almost $12,000 in restitution to the Postal Service for money that they have already given back to the customers who lost the money.
Yeah.
So it's good to see they're actually keeping track of this, because to me it's something my mother has brought up to me, that I have a cousin who lives in Ohio, and he's had several things that have been sent to him, like birthday cards and stuff, that have disappeared. And my mother now won't send like a birthday card in like a birthday card or whatever envelope. Yeah. She'll actually put it inside something else and mail it for fear that, you know, if it's got a check in it, someone's going to steal it. Because a lot of people send birthday cards, they'll just put like $20 cash.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So good to see they caught somebody.
Yeah, good thing. Mm-hmm. Well, this is the beginning of the month, so I want to revisit the Stanley Gibbons stock price news. And after the Brexit, their stock value dropped, but it's up to 11.75 pennies per share. Remember that at one point this was over £3 per share. So this is a real big drop. Stanley Gibbons is getting $2.5 million for leasing its...
That's £2.5 million.
I'm sorry, £2.5 million. For leasing its premises, well, actually, it might be dollars, because the premises in New York on Madison Avenue. So anyway, the Stanley Gibbons is, I guess, giving up its Madison Avenue properties, and its prices are slowly going back up, but we'll see what happens and keep it informed. Last thing is, on YouTube, we put up the Can You Mail Your Child YouTube. And everybody go and check that out. I think we did a really good job on it. If you remember, this is May Pierstorf's story. And that's it.
And now our expert topic, more negotiating.
No, wait, wait, what? I want my money back.
Many presume everyone is after a win-win. However, some cultures and organizations are driven by an approach that assumes one side wins and the other side loses. Win-win negotiators see deal-making as a collaborative, problem-solving process, whereas win-lose negotiators view it as confrontational. Has anyone here had that happen?
I am not going to mention any people, but I know of a couple of people who strive to rip off the other person. They may have like reperforated and regummed stamps that are misdescribed and things like that. They get an actual joy out of it. And it was rather remarkable to me that these people exist, because until I got up into the upper levels of stamp collecting, I didn't even know these people existed. At a certain point, you got to look at the people and say, who am I dealing with? And what is their reputation? You know, deal with reputable dealers. And because these guys, everybody knows who they are. Nobody deals with them. But you'll still see them at the stamp shows and you'll go, man, that stamp seems overpriced. And it's like, well, go ask another dealer what they think of the guy. You know, get some references, let's say.
Sensitivity to time and closing the deal. Kaz, you have a comment here.
Yeah, I don't know if you people know, but I owned a chain of day spas. And I had to train massage therapists and hairstylists of how to negotiate. And I just wanted to give that little thing here. It benefited me incredibly. Every time I tell somebody it and they go to buy a car, they thank me profusely because it helped them out. I'm going to give you my little tidbit. This is my tactic. And it has to deal with doing a closing statement. And a closing statement is always, it isn't $5, take it or leave it. That's not a closing statement. Well, that's a closing statement, but it's not an effective. If you were at a car dealership, it would be, and you hear this all the time, they never say, how much do you want to pay? They'll say, what will it take to get you into this car? They don't ask how much money you're going to pay. They say, what'll it take to get you into this car? And then they do an amazing thing. They shut up and stop. Now, for the massage therapist and the hairstylist, I used to always tell them, you want to reschedule the person for another appointment. So your closing statement should be, when would you like to come in next? And then you shut up. And here's the little test I gave them. Tom, ask me, what'll it take to get into this car?
Cash, what'll it take to get you into this car?
That was 15 seconds. The listeners here probably thought, oh my God, what happened to the podcast? Something cut out. Generally speaking, if there's enough people, you will do this and they will start laughing and giggling. Or they won't make it through all 15 seconds. They'll sit there and go, oh my goodness, you know, we got to say something. There's silence here. We have to fill this space. That is where everybody loses when they're buying a car. That is where the hairstylists lose when they're trying to book appointments. That's where stamp collectors lose when they make an offer and then don't give the other side enough time to process whether or not they want to accept it or not. You offered a person $1,000. Well, maybe he's thinking, what am I going to do with the $1,000? How much money can I make? Or yes, I will accept the $1,000. Where am I going to get it from? And instead, what will happen is, somebody will come up and say, after 5 seconds of silence, they'll say, oh, I have to say something. Something has to occur here. And they'll jump up and say, $1,100. Well, you may have already had the $1,000 accepted. You just had to wait for him to say yes. When you're dealing with cars, you'll go in and you see this all the time. You know, I have to talk to my manager or something. But the person will say, what will it take to get you into this car? And then they will stop talking. And they will not talk at all because they know that the next person who talks loses. Because the next person who talks is going to make the deal. And if the other side talks, it means you made a better deal. If you talk, they made a better deal. So this is just a tactic that I have used for over 25 years, and it always works. I invite you all to just give it a little try sometime.
You're like a politician. You still haven't answered the question. What will it take to get you into the car?
Oh, I need better gas mileage. Sorry, I'm out of here.
See, I made him talk first.
Yes, you did.
Do this just when you're with your spouse or your friends or in a group or something. Don't talk for 15 seconds. Everybody will think, oh my God, what's going on?
To all the men listening to the show, don't do that with your spouse. I'm just saying.
Well, off the subject, and this is one that I try to use minimally, because it kind of pisses off people. And you can use it generally only once per dealer. You've got a deal. You're done. You accept the price. They accept the price. But you haven't actually come out and said, I accept the price. Just say, you got to do better than that. And it's a really unethical sort of thing to do a lot of times, because negotiation in the United States is supposed to be fair. So what you've done is you've gotten a fair agreement, and now you're saying, I'm going to ask you for more. You say, you got to do better than that. Not that you have to lower the price or anything like that. You say, you got to do better than that, because that gives the person the ability to do something that's non-monetary. Yes, I'll sell you the stamp, and I'll drive you to the airport. It's like, okay, yes, I'll sell you the stamp, and I'll throw in this...
Kid.
And I'll buy you lunch. You know, you got to do better than that is a good one. You should use it sparingly, and you should try not to use it to the same person more than once, maybe twice, but... If you use it more than that, they'll learn, and then it's totally worthless, and you get a bad rep.
I think if anyone really wants a crash course in watching negotiating, watch Pawn Stars.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure you don't see a lot of the negotiation. They just show you a little bit of it.
I tell people, you know, ask them the closing question and then shut up. Watch Pawn Stars. They'll say, what do you want for it?
And stop talking.
And stop. They will never say, I'll give you $10,000 for it.
Another good one to watch is Hardcore Pawn.
Yeah. And there's also, Warehouse 13? Warehouse 13.
No.
No. Warehouse. What's the one in Georgia?
Warehouse 13 is actually a drama.
Oh, okay. Warehouse. There's one warehouse with a number on the back of it that's from Georgia. And it's the same thing. It's like, what do you take? You know, the expert just told you how much it's all worth.
Well, we covered that before. It's, you know, oh, hey, it's worth $10,000. Okay, how much do you take for it? Oh, I want $10,000. And they're like, mm-hmm. No.
Yeah. You came in here and you wanted $800, and now you want $10,000? Well, it's worth $10,000. I should have just given you the $800. I'm trying to be fair here.
Yeah, but on the other side, you do hear a realistic negotiation between the two.
Sometimes, yes.
And the one thing that you get on Pawn Stars that you don't get in real life is the expert said how much the thing is really worth. So what really is going on is that Pawn Stars is negotiating how much profit they're going to get off selling this item.
But right. That's only on certain items. They don't bring an expert in for every single item.
But the ones that they don't bring in the expert, those aren't the fun ones.
Well, they are sometimes, because you don't know how much it's worth, so you're seeing what the person who wants to sell it or pawn it is willing to...
Well, it's interesting.
What they want for it versus what...
Because they always do an interview out in the parking lot saying, well, what will you take? Well, I'm not going to go below $200 for this item. And they end up taking, you know, $150 or something like that.
Well, but you see the interviews after the fact when deals aren't made where they're saying, oh, well, I just think they were too low, or... I just don't think they were right, or something along those lines. They have a reason
times,
to believe.
A lot of times those are the ones where the expert came in and said it's worth $10,000. Well, he can't make that much profit. And that's really what's going on in their head. I don't want him to make all that profit.
That could
Why not?
Be, yeah, it could be. Especially,
then go out and sell it yourself.
Well, no, it's worse. It's worse than that. It's I inherited this from my Aunt Mildred, so I paid $0 for this.
Right.
But you're going to make $7,000 profit. Of course, I'm going to make $15,000, but you're going to make $7,000 profit. That's too much. It's like,
yeah, this has been in my family for like 16 generations.
Yeah. Well, if it's 16 generations, I'd keep it. But, you know, a lot of times.
Yeah,
you
but not everybody will.
Yeah, that's
true. Like how many people sell their stamp collections versus, you know, hey, my great great grandfather started this collection and it was handed down to my grandfather, my father, and now I have it. I have zero interest in stamps. It's out of here.
Again, you can look up every single stamp and say, okay, this collection is worth $10,000, and the guy offers you $150 for it. Hey, you didn't put the $10,000 into it. you probably didn't put anywhere near half of that into it. And neither did whoever assembled the collection, because they bought everything at a discount. And
well, and like I said, though, it's going along the lines of what Cash says. Four generations back, if you just inherited it, you have zero financial into this.
Right. It's found money for you.
Exactly. But some people don't care about the heirloom value of it. They want the cash.
Well, it's like the Magic cards that I've been selling on eBay recently. I bought all of those cards new. I bought them out. I personally opened those packs. I didn't buy anything, individual cards. I bought them all as packs and opened them. And I didn't play very much, hardly at all for most. And so most of them are unplayed. And they've sat in boxes for 10 years. And just taking up space. You know, what do I have into it? Well, it's...
By now, it's sentimental value.
Yeah. And it's just a matter of, you know, I don't want to toss it in the garbage can because I know somebody would like to have them. But at some point, I will either give them away or throw them in the garbage because I don't want to move them again.
Right.
And I'll sell as many as I can until that time. And then I'll abandon them.
Thank you for joining us for episode 82. This has been Cash, Scott, Tom, and I'm your host, Dawn. You can reach us with your questions or comments at stampshowheretoday@gmail.com, Twitter at stampshowht, or leave a message on our Google Voice number, 1-949-873-4298. You can also check out our website at stampshowheretoday.com or follow us on Facebook or watch us on YouTube. And as always, keep collecting.
This episode of Stamp Show Here Today is brought to you by the Philatelic Book of Secrets, the book that teaches you about repurfs, regums, color varieties, and much more. Get yours for $10 at www.philatelicsecrets.com today.
Hi, this is Bob Prager with Gary Poser Incorporated, and we're in Long Island, New York, and New Jersey, and our philosophy at Gary Poser Incorporated is this. We would rather pay very fair prices on 9 out of 10 collections that we look at versus trying to just offer very low prices on 1 out of 2 and making a big score. That's never our philosophy. So if you want to be treated fairly, please give us a call anytime at 800-323-4279, and again, my name is Bob Prager.